Hey everybody, just a real quick heads up. When we start to get into a little bit of this episode, specifically the TV show American Gods, it does get a little bit explicit, so this is your warning now. Thanks and enjoy the show.
Welcome, and you're listening to a Queued Up Media Group production of Geekologist Radio, a division of the Ninja Pancake family of podcasts, and now...
Shut up and sit down.
Hey, it's Cajun, and welcome to Geekologist Radio, where we take you through our queue, into our gaming systems, and ride the hype train from the past and into the future. Let's introduce our crew for tonight's cast. First up, we have Chris Two Wolves, if he can stop laughing.
I can't stop laughing. I'm super excited about this week's episode. There's a shit ton of stuff to talk about. I'm already cursing. And it has been, like, literally one of the worst weeks. So, like, being able to hang out with four people that I can just BS with, I'm super happy.
Yeah, now let's go over to Damien.
Wait.
What's up,
man? Hang on. Whoa, don't you mean Lightning McShitson's pants?
Hey. Let's see, now I gotta explain myself and that ass. So we had a weird, bad lightning storm that just happened and canceled my son's track meet. It went over my head. Like, we thought we all got struck by lightning in the car. And yeah, I thought I shit myself.
Middle dick.
Oh, knock it off. No, seriously though, I did. Like, I don't think I was the only person checking myself. I'm sorry, that was scary.
AKA
as hell.
Skid marks.
Middle dick riding in some skid marks right now.
Yep.
And the name changer of names in our Discord, Mr. Beefouts.
What's going on? This is my second week non-smoking. Yay, go me! All right. Let us get on with this episode because holy crap, we got a lot to talk about.
So first, we're going to do what we did last week, a little errors and omissions. We didn't catch a lot of what we said wrong, but I did have some big computer restart issues last week. And you might have noticed my audio was like early in some areas and then got like back on in the middle and then was like overlapping in the other. So I think there's something with the timing on my computer on that end. So sorry about that, guys. I'm restarted now and hopefully everything's good.
That and Fouts hasn't had a cigarette in a week at the time of the edit, and I screwed the pooch on that. So hashtag blame Fouts.
Also, don't you have a new toy?
Yes, you're hearing me through the crisp sounds of a Blue Yeti microphone. Yay!
Yay!
Team Yeti all four now, so we're ret to go.
So, Blue, if you're listening...
If you want to sponsor podcasts, which I'm pretty sure most people use, we do too.
Let's move on into the queue.
We switched round and round till half past dawn. There was 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing on. 57 channels and nothing.
All right, so first up in our queue, we got Hulu is going to start the ever-popular trend of offering live TV service.
Yes.
Everybody cutting the cord, so everybody else might as well. When are we going to get Netflix's option?
I would hope so, right? Like, the thing that's really cool about the fact that Hulu is offering the $40 is $8 of it is already part of the stuff that you pay for, right? So, like, you're really only paying $32 for the live TV stuff. The problem is they have nothing aside from like local stations for this thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, you get TNT. I think I don't even think you get TLC. Like, it's really just like a few state.
Listen, you get HGTV. That alone would almost get my wife.
They have Showtime right now. They still don't have HBO. HBO is the killer. Like, they don't have HBO. Yep. They do have Disney, which is a huge deal. But everybody has Disney. Everybody has ESPN. They have ESPN. So $40 right now is a decent price. But you throw in HBO and some other premier channels, you have my attention. The other thing that's really crappy is you start with 50 hours of the DVR stuff, which, Jesus, I mean, Comcast, it's just ridiculous, the 50-hour thing. You got to pay $20 more, and then you can do like two or three TVs, and then you get more hours. So that is kind of BS, but, I mean, everybody's hopping in this game. I use PlayStation View, so.
Yeah, so Sling, you get a free DVR with Sling for most of the TV shows for at least three episodes.
Yep.
For less. Oh, well, you pay $40 and you get a very large quantity of channels with Sling. I haven't compared it to Hulu, but you get a free DVR for at least 3 episodes with almost all the shows on Sling. There's a few that can opt out, but for the most of the stuff, it's right there that you can play anytime. And for Hulu, for the premium channels, HBO has HBO Now. Anything that has a Hulu app on it has access to HBO Now. So I doubt this HBO Now would jump into that because somebody could just switch apps and give HBO $15 directly a month.
The biggest difference between Hulu and Sling is you were saying Hulu already has the Showtime option. That is an add-on option for Sling. You can add on any of the Stars. You can't do Stars, but you can do Epics, Hulu. You can do HBO, Showtime, Epic, everything except Stars, because Stars is a pain in the rear end, and they want you to buy from them directly and nobody else.
So just a real quick side note here. The cord cutting's awesome, except you get effed up the rear on the fact that if you are using an internet service, most people want you to add the TV on for the pricing. I mean, I know my TV pricing or my internet service is $80 just for the high-end stuff, and then it's like a total of $89 if I want to add in the regular channels. So that kind of sucks. And the other thing that sucks for the $40 price tag is exactly what you said. You can't add the premium channels are additionals. HBO alone is $15. So you're paying $40 for this service. You're spending another $15 for HBO, $15 for Stars. You've already now we're talking, we're at $70, and it's typically an add-on to an $80 package for Comcast of $10. So you're really close to still being even right now.
Now, with your PlayStation View that you have, isn't HBO all that included already?
I pay $64.99. I get Showtime, HBO, and I get 90 channels, including premium, so TLC, A&E. The only thing that's really shitty about it is the fact that like CBS, ABC and Fox run off of time delay like Hulu, so you've got to wait 24 hours in order to watch those episodes. You get NBC and CBS, you can backtrack those. So that's the only thing that's really, really crappy about that. But other than that, the $64.99 is flat. Like, that's your tax included everything. There is nothing else besides that price. So it's nice. But the problem is my internet service is still $80. So in total, I'm paying $140. I'm not really saving a ton by having it. So it's still not beneficial because they have you by the – honestly, they have you by the balls on when it comes to the internet part.
Yeah, I cut the cord a year ago, and it's already going up with no increase in internet speed by $11 a month. Yep. Just creeping each time.
It's also the thing along with that you got to think about is with companies like Comcast going in there and putting metered connections in different markets. Like in my market, I'm metered connection now. So I have to pay an extra $50 a month just to have an unlimited amount of access to the internet, because if you don't, especially if you're a gamer and you have multiple consoles and it's like, oh, I just got to download another copy on. Before you know it, you're at your 1 terabyte limit. So if you don't have that $50 coverage, you're screwed.
Okay, Brandon? So to fix that, first download it to one Xbox, transfer it to an external hard drive, then take the external hard drive and transfer it to the other Xbox. That'll solve that, right?
Yeah, there is. Yeah, that does solve that. I do get that.
Second, I don't have to worry about the TV thing because there is no TV provider with internet bundles here. So, I mean, that doesn't apply to everybody, but it does apply to like the mass majority of the country that has to deal with Comcast's crap.
Well, because where I'm at, it's Comcast or nothing. There is no Frontier. Yeah. There is no Time Warner. There is anything. Comcast owns it or you don't have internet. That's it. So I'm stuck with if I want. I mean, we have 4 people in my house that use internet connection devices, and most of the time I'm running at least 3. So to not have blast package, my internet speed just ticks down to like 0. So I don't have your metered thing, Damien, but Faust, without it, I'm screwed. I don't have another option. So I know Faust, you wanted to talk about a movie that we've all seen.
Yeah. So last week we talked about a new movie that was mentioned, the sequel to Unbreakable, which is Glass. And there's a direct tie into Split. Well, I had never watched it. I don't think a couple of us had until this last week.
I didn't.
I have not. I still haven't. Yes.
Oh, you still haven't seen it? Okay.
I know the ending.
Honestly, the movie was okay for me. I like McAvoy's acting in it, the different personalities. He does 8 out of the 24 personalities in the movie. And he did a phenomenal job just switching on the fly back and forth between each one of them. But the movie overall was kind of meh.
Yeah, it was M. Night Shyamalan. A little bit of Return to Glory, but like the ending was kind of crap. The 8 of the 24 characters was really great. I really didn't think there was a need to even mention 24. If you were only going to show 8, you could have said he had 10 personalities or 12 personalities. It would have meant the same thing to me. The personalities felt forced almost towards the tail end. Like they almost had to show them because in reality, in the movie, you only saw typically 3. On an ongoing or 3 or 4 on an ongoing basis and
four.
And then in the videos you saw more, not really sure why the girls were picked up in the movie. Not really sure why the dad was cracked in the movie. Some of the stuff was really kind of just, it's like where would, to me, the plot line, there was a lot of holes. You could poke holes a lot. His character was really good. I mean, but the storyline wasn't that great. If this leads to the Glass movie, then okay, this is the filler and people get cared about M. Night again because he hasn't been on the map in a while. But it was all right for a watch. I watched it, I think, on Friday night, and it was only a couple hours, a little over a couple hours. So Derek, if you have a few hours, it's worth watching. Like, I would watch it. I would recommend somebody who's into that kind of stuff to watch it, but I wouldn't, my expectation level would be a much lower compared to an early M. Night movie.
Yeah.
And I think
I did really enjoy it, but also I'm watching it, and the entire time I'm comparing it to things that I deal with at a workplace. And so McAvoy's character was just, like, his ability to switch like that, literally, was, like, it was phenomenal.
What I was going to get at is the fact that The Sixth Sense was Shyamalan's first movie. It hit really big, and since that point, he's been downhill from there. So trying to get back to that, and trying to keep that amount of suspense in any film that he's done since then, regardless of whether you think Unbreakable was good and some of the other films that he's done, it just is never compared to that. So it's really hard to keep him up at that level.
See, one of my favorite shows of his was Lady in the Water, which is one of his lower ranking ones. But what I was going to say is that not only is the getting the Unbreakable sequel, Glass, where are you showing up? They are actually greenlit another split film entirely.
Yeah.
That's a mistake.
He's going to ride whatever he can. He was all about making original content before, and then once he failed there, like, okay, let me just stick to the universe.
Then he realizes he needs to eat.
Somebody please produce a movie of mine.
Exactly. Just give me money. Stop yelling at me. Stop yelling at me. Please stop yelling at me. But speaking of shows that nobody really knows about, one of mine that we've been talking about is Better Call Saul. And I've been kind of vague with the conversations lately about it, mainly just to not give away too much. But we kind of talk a little more in deep with a lot of our shows. So I wanted to kind of cover a couple of things, more of the story and a couple of predictions more than the generalities. So Hector Salamanca, he's a walking, talking person in this one because it's in the past. So he gets embarrassed by Gus Fring to the big boss, and he gets a big shipment confiscated at the border due to Mike. But it's unbeknownst to him that Mike did it. Now, how Mike did it is the absolute awesome part. So this gets you excited about going and watching this show. So Mike wants to get back at Hector Salamanca. So he gets some cocaine and puts it in some sneakers. And he ties them together and throws them over a power line, which is on the route of Hector's truck to a delivery. And then he knows that these guys are going to be hiding their guns before they cross the border at this one spot due to intel from Gus. And as they're hiding them, he shoots his gun into the air at a slow cadence. So the guys think that he's a hunter. So when his actual shot that matters happens, which is when the truck pulls underneath the shoe, he shoots the shoe. It drains cocaine all over the top and back of the truck. So when it hits the border, all the dogs smell the cocaine and the guys get arrested and get confiscated. So that was so slick that I was like, that's what makes this show awesome, because it's these really creative and awesome ways how people solve their problems. And one of the ones that's upcoming is, I really think that Jimmy just did a plea bargain in the case. And I really think that he didn't want to sign his confession, But I think he's going to do it in the bar when he goes in front of the bar. So he has to go in front of the bar to defend his felony confession he just did. And I think he's going to use some evidence he just got Mike to steal from Chuck's house as entrapment. And I think that's what was hidden in the photograph that they weren't showing. So that's my theory on that, that he's going for an entrapment plea there. So that's my little Westworld style short theory on Better Call Saul. Chris, you are into musicals and singing at weddings?
Yeah, I was late to this. My wife and I, iTunes just popped a few weeks ago, La La Land. And so she was super excited about it. And in fact, like had 2 weeks prior been like, hey, we're going to watch La La Land. I'm like, ah. And then so last week she said that. And then finally, so we watch it. And it, funny part, 45 minutes into La La Land, she's asleep. And so she's like, this isn't very good. And I'm like, okay, well, at this point now I've invested, and this sounds very, very cheap of me, it is, $5.99 into watching La La Land. So I'm going to finish this movie, even though I don't really want to finish this movie. It was a musical that wasn't a musical. Like, it was really weird. Like, it was sing-talking a lot, like, in it. And it wasn't, like, the broad musical show tunes that you expect. Like, the opening scene was this really big to-do. And I was like, okay, wow, this is going to be good. And then it just went down real fast. I appreciate the performances. Emma Stone was really good in it. Ryan Gosling good in it. As a movie, it was eh. The storyline repeated itself. It was just kind of like if I would give you a top down view of it, it is basically two people who fall in love, and then obviously break apart for whatever reason, and they always want to kind of get back to that point, and they reminisce about ways that they could get back to that point, but that never really happens, and then the movie ends, and I'm like, oh. Wow, that's kind of just that. It just left me, I don't know, it left me bland, and I'm like, I wouldn't recommend it to somebody. And I know people who've watched it who are really into musicals, and they have said the same thing, like, it was okay, but like, it wasn't what I expected.
Wow.
So it kind of sounds like you just said like an alternate reality version of The Notebook.
Yes.
The alternate reality of The Notebook, if it was a musical and then the people didn't really end up together and the acting on some of the parts was not that very good.
So worse than The Notebook. Wow.
Yeah, it was really good. Although, like, I thought I had a Claire Danes sighting for a second in that movie, and I was like, holy shit, she's in a movie again? Like, I got really excited. That was the exciting part. I'm like, that's Claire Danes. And then I go to the IMDb, and it's not her, and I'm like, oh, man, I'm really bad at this now. Because I thought it was red hair, acted like I was like my so-called life, that's her, and then it wasn't her. And then I'm thinking, gosh, if she's the older sister, and she was just, like, in my head, she was in my so-called life, I'm like, man, she's old. And then I was thinking of Ryan Gosling, and I'm thinking, I wonder if he's old enough to be her sister, you know? So it was just...
Yeah, she doesn't look as old now. Plus, she has a dyed blonde anyway, so at this point, so...
Right, and yeah. So La La Land, okay, not great. If you're into musicals, don't expect a full musical. It's not Mamma Mia. It's like Mamma Mia cut in a third. So that's all I have to say.
So I just checked out. It was my brother-in-law's birthday. I had to go out, you know, he's like, hey, we just want to see a movie. My daughters are watching Rings. I kind of want to see it. Do you mind renting it? So we check it out, rent it. It's actually filmed here in Washington. And this film, like if you've seen the other movies or you heard about them or anything like that, they're based off the ones that came from Japan, all that stuff, Ringu. But this one was really well done, and it tied everything in a nice little bow to end the series. And had they done that, had they actually like said, okay, this tells the whole backstory, this actually gets you, it fills in the blanks and everything that people had questions from the other movies, the other two, had they chose to do that, this movie would have rated a lot higher. But then true horror movie fashion, they're like, oh, just kidding, we're not stopping yet.
Brutal.
And that, like, it actually pissed me off. Like, I was like, okay, this would have been, like, had this been an end on a trilogy, a cap, it would have made them all just great. But the fact that they're still rolling with it, and the thing is, I get it, it's in horror movies, it was a success, even though critically not, you know, they film it on a low budget, and it makes a bunch of money, then it makes it worthwhile for them to put another one into theaters. But even still, I would only rate it like I enjoyed it. I would rate it 5.5 or a 6 because of the ending.
Oh, I hate that when you like a movie that it just like dumps on the ending. Yeah.
Yeah, the ending totally burned it. Like we actually had a conversation for like a good 30 minutes after it. Like, you know, if as you chose to end this, would have made all three movies great, spectacular. But yeah, that was the problem there. So Cajun, you're gonna talk a little bit about Bosch, right?
Yes, and back to it. I'm not gonna talk much anything about Fargo this week besides saying that I haven't watched it yet. For me, I watched it through Amazon, and it drops today, and just had too much going on. Wife had a class tonight, and just completely didn't watch it. So I'll be two episodes catching up on Fargo next week. So sorry, guys.
Real quick on episodes to catch up on. I am the only one that's caught up on Silicon Valley. I'm just saying. You guys need to get your shit together.
Yes. Agreed. Yes, we do.
Okay. I agree.
That is my soapbox for the week.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Yes. Tell us. Put us in our place, because that one's one that I really want to watch. It's just for some reason, for the same reason that I just skip my brain. Like, oh, yeah, I need to watch that show. I have a podcast to talk about it on. Got it.
I started watching that show because of you. I know. So there's no excuse.
Speaking of, I actually started watching a show because of Cajun as well, which is The Last Kingdom.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and season 2 is out now on Netflix.
What?
So I am catching. Yeah, season 2 is out. They silently dropped it. We need to start talking about that. I'm going to be getting caught up to you on that. And we'll start talking about Last Kingdom. But I want just to do a little heads up on it. It is everything. If you've listened to our past three episodes, the guy is very lucky. And then at the same time, very unlucky. Yep. And it is like Game of Thrones light.
Game of Thrones light, fantastic. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, really well done.
Show, yeah. We've been talking over the last few weeks specifically about Netflix and being able to hit on topical subjects. I've been watching with my wife 6 episodes now of a show called Dear White People. I know it's been a kind of a hot button issue specifically because it deals with a predominantly white Ivy League college, and then it has a bunch of students of diverse culture, and they try to talk about race and discrimination and how that affects people. And they talk about it in such a real manner that is not typical of movies or stereotypes that TV shows and movies try to pretend to be. It's basically one of the girls, and you kind of go through her story. But I looked at my wife and I go, so what's your tape? Because it reminded me of 13 Reasons Why, because each episode is one individual and it's their point of view of this entire story. And the story is based upon a girl who finds out that – who has a show called Dear White People. And there is an Ivy League white guy who wants to come out with something called Dear Black People. And so they revolt against that. And she has an email that comes out about a party that he initially was going to start. His dad cancels it. She hacks into his account and still has it. And – if you don't know about this sort of thing, they have a blackface party, which is basically a bunch of white students who paint their face and try to become African Americans and think it's hysterical and it's this thing. And it's very socially isolating for somebody to break someone down to simply a Halloween costume and making them feel less than. And that kind of talks about that and how that affects their culture in the school. And how it affects the side of African Americans, and how it affects the side of white students, and it just kind of it digs into that really, really well, and it gives a real point of view and not just like a stereotypical point of view. I think it leads to people who are torn between two sides, people who feel very strongly one way and people who feel very strongly another way. What I appreciate again is the fact that it gives different points of view. So there is somebody who has a coming of age who is feeling out their sexuality, and the crux of this entire thing is the person who is doing the Dear White People and feels like the angry person who is standing up for social justice is someone who is secretly dating somebody who is white. And so I thought that was an awesome twist. I'm like, this is really good. It's not like a twist that's a secret. It happens in literally the first episode. I can't recommend it enough. It's a half an hour long per episode, only 10 episodes long. It's, again, Netflix hitting on social issues, just like they did with 13 Reasons Why, like they do on this. And that's the reason why people don't watch network television anymore, because they are afraid to touch these kind of things. And that's all. I just wanted to let everybody know about it because I thought it was really good.
Excellent. Yeah. And it's these Netflix and Amazons that are willing to drop the cash, and seeing some shows come out on Hulu that are getting some hype as well. And we see more and more, hopefully more and more of that coming, where these networks, internet networks, are setting the stage for regular TV shows to catch up. Like, people want to see good quality shows, give it to them. And good quality writers are getting jobs.
This hits so close to that HBO. Like, I mean, listen, this is not for kids. The language and the sex scenes that are in every single one of these episodes are literally to the brink of, we're just almost not showing nudity. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. It is so damn close that they are walking that line. And remember, we talked about how the fact that these Netflix, Hulu, whatever, has to walk that line, like very close to being NBC and being HBO. And this show does that. So you're going to see more and more of that, where it's like, my kids cannot see this, like, at all. They can't even be in the room while I'm watching this. So, again, if you have kids or if you are in a sensitive area, this is not the show to be watching while those folks are around.
Gotcha. And to get y'all caught up on kind of where I'm at on Bosch, like I said, Amazon dropped all of them. I'm up to episode 7 right now. I complained previously about this season having multiple cases and kind of a little confusing. I'm going to dial that back because I see the reason why they did it now. And that was to kind of show some initial confusion as Bosch is, or they're trying to unveil who is surveilling Bosch. So he's has a bunch of things he's working on. Somebody's surveilling him. He doesn't know who it is. So having all those cases kind of has him try to figure out who it is. But also all these other cases allows other detective teams that we've seen in the past to be highlighted. These actors and that have been just working cases in the background that he's just talked to, we actually get to see them work cases a little more, and brings those actors and people into the limelight, so it's not just Bosch and his partner running the whole show. And a couple of like theories I have is that the two special forces agents that they're chasing at this point, I doubt that they're going to come back, even though Bosch warned his lieutenant that they're going to come back. I think they ran. But for a show like this, just let everybody run out of country and not come back, I think that's going to be pretty rough, but we shall see. I don't think they're going to retaliate, though. And he's going to have to come clean. Bosch is going to have to come clean to Jimmy about that tape. He's been holding that tape too long. They've been showing it too much. He's going to have to come clean to him. So, yeah, another Jimmy tape. Same thing as Better Call Saul. Jimmy and a tape. Same name, same scenario. Pass this on to Mr. Damien. Talking about a show we said we were guaranteed we were going to cover this week.
Yeah, and I'm talking about American Gods. And there's a lot to talk about with this show. I know Chris, like with you, you're someone that went into it. You guys could call me the Care Bear.
Oh, I just unmuted this because I'm ready to roll.
I know you are.
Mario Kart is down.
This show is like hitting with the cast. It's kind of hitting us on a lot of different angles. There's intrigue, but there's also with some of us. There's some of us that are kind of hanging back a little.
There
bit.
There is vagina eating in this.
There is, but not the kind that you're not muff diving.
Reverse.
Yes. Not somebody eating out of vagina, because this is Stars and they could show something like that. This is a vagina eating a human,
like an alligator.
Devouring a human. When that scene was happening,
but me and my wife was like, enjoying what? It. He was like really into it. He was like, "Thank you so much.
I worship you, Bukless. I worship you."
Mm-hmm. It was pretty graphic. Like, I didn't know Stars got down like that. Like, I haven't owned Stars before, so I'm like, "Oh, okay, this is really cool." Which everybody's been
you've never seen Spartacus?
No, everybody's been telling me about Black Sails, which I haven't watched yet. So,
good.
Yeah, I know, something I have to. My wife, we were about 15 minutes in, and she's like, "Why are you making me watch this? You know I would not be into this sort of thing." And it was really kind of freaky. Like, it was very psychedelic, very kind of out there. The storyline itself, I thought, was very abstract, which is fine by me. Like, I can give things credit for, you know, going a certain direction, and I'll kind of go with that for a bit, at least an episode or two. But for your average person watching this show who knows nothing about American Gods, you were lost in the first 5 to 10 minutes and you're like, yep, I'm done. Have no interest in this.
Or if you're someone who follows a lot of different, like, if you're the kind of geek that follows a lot of different, like, cultures and stuff like that. Like, I love Odinism and all that stuff. And so instantly watching this stuff, I'm trying to place the gods. I'm like, okay, you're from this one. You're from this. You're from this. Like, I'm recognizing nicknames. I'm actually, I was pulling, like, a Derek kind of thing, Westworld, and pulling up notes and stuff. I watched this episode 4 times and... and was like taking, was literally taking notes.
How the hell can you watch that episode 4 times?
I barely got
through. I'm sorry. I am, seriously, I'm excited as crap for this series and I hope it gets better. But that first episode was horrible.
See, I didn't think so because, like, it's an introduction of the characters and stuff. And then I started figuring out about, like, I was trying to pick what the things were, what they're representing, what it was their take on, like the forest, the skeleton forest that they talk about, the, but it's also, like, I know already one of my favorite characters is going to be Leprechaun. Like, that introduction there, I was like, okay.
I watched it twice, because the first time I didn't feel like I caught anything. The second time I didn't catch much more, but I got a basis of kind of where the story was going and what was going on. The scene in the cemetery I thought was a little dramatic and was a little too over the top for me. It was just like, I get it, you know, she feels, and she, you know, wife cheated, blah, blah, you know, I got that. But it was just it really didn't, like, if you weren't watching it a second time, like, to me, you had no idea where the hell this was at the end of this. The previews where it says, you know, coming in the next episodes, it was like, oh, okay, that's where the story's going. But that first episode didn't give me that.
Okay, so the cemetery scene I actually thought was one of the better scenes of the entire show.
Really?
Because you could actually see how much she was hurting. Mm-hmm. Over the whole situation of her husband and his wife having, you know, extramarital affairs with each other and stuff. You can see the pain that she was going through, and it actually looked extremely
the
real.
The scene in the church, but, I thought was good, that, though. That she was like, oh, you didn't know, huh? Like, it was like, yeah. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that part I liked.
Yeah, so you're talking about Robbie's widow at this point, like her acting in that scene in the cemetery and stuff. I thought she chewed up her scene, even with all the Botox that's injected into her face. She still conveyed what she needed to convey. Ian McShane, dude, killed it. He chewed up all the scenery. He was a lightning rod of acting. I can't say the same about the rest of the cast. Oh my God. Shadow Moon. He looked like a guy that just picked off a football field and was like, here, act. And he's like, I will walk around and try to act.
He gets better. His acting is really good. If you've seen if you watch the 100, he's Lincoln on the 100. So he's got the ability. The reason and the reason why he's quiet on this is because it's they're trying to build up that dark looming figure, because he's a new god of death. He's like the new Loki, if you will. And that's the whole thing.
I thought there was a Loki in this book
series. Old god. There is, okay. But he's a new god. See, this whole series is about new versus old. It's a rising of new gods versus the old gods. Ian McShane is recruiting a new god to protect himself.
Okay.
That's Shadow's job. And the whole thing is with the when they're showing the different things, is it's showing that he can't. They're showing, like, the new gods are, like, these high-tech things. Now, I'll admit, the tech god, that stuff, that was, like, kind of pulled me out for a second. I'm like, this doesn't make sense. I get it. I know that it's in the books.
Yeah.
But I prefer more grounded in reality stuff as much as you can.
That fight scene in the bar was kind of crap. See, I didn't really care for the fight scene in the bar either. I was just like, this is, to me, that was, like, way over the top again. It was like, so he knocked his ass out once, and I'm like, oh, okay, great. Then he gets back up again, and they start the fight over. I'm like, dude, I just watched this. Like, what are we doing?
So the tech god, I actually thought that was appropriate. If you think about it, old versus new, back in the old days, there was no technology. There was nothing. Now you got this new god that's technology. I mean, think about it. How many times have you seen myself or Chris playing Mario Run while
we're recording?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, I'm sitting there watching y'all. I'm just
appropriate. Exactly. I mean, that god was completely appropriate, in my opinion, to have him in this series.
That is actually true.
But the personification,
I see what you're talking about.
Like how it was executed, I thought it was distracting, wasn't defined at all. It was just, it was constantly, where is this coming from? It's all this philosophical, unrealistic stuff mixed in with some poor acting. So you really don't know what you should be feeling or what you should be doing. And they have these artsy art scenes that are just misplaced. This hole in the prison wall and creepy trees and a buffalo with burning eyes and... Oh, the technical, the white buffalo.
That's going on a different. White buffalo goes on to a whole nother culture, and that's going into some of the white buffalo goes into Native American gods and stuff like that. So there's a whole nother thing with that.
But your average person doesn't know that.
Yeah, you have to know. Right. You have to know all these visions to understand all the things.
I know. But it's like I was screaming. Like my wife watched up into the vagina swallowing the person, and she's like, I'm done, and why are you watching this? And then my oldest son walks out and looks, and he goes, this is on Stars, right? And I'm like, yeah, walk out. He's like, okay, I'm not gonna watch Spartacus.
it's just even more violent and sexual.
Parenting tips 101.
Derek, I completely agree about the bad acting part, because I thought the lead actor was not that good at all. Like, I thought
he was a
muscle guy, and he was brooding and he looked good, whatever, but that was hit. That was it. Like, his acting was not good at all. But the guy from the HBO, what the hell was that Western that he was in? Because as soon as
you're talking about Ian McShane,
yeah. I saw him and I'm like, ooh,
you're talking about Deadwood.
I'm like, dude, I love you. Like, so I was pretty pumped when I saw him, but he was, to me, that was the highlight. I'm like, oh, his ass character, the guy played an asshole. I'm like, this is awesome. And then when he faked the fact that the reason why he got on the plane for the first class, I'm like, this is great. Like, I liked him. But other than that, and the heads coin thing, I thought was really good. That was really cool.
Now, who do you think he is?
I know who he is.
If he's going by...
Okay. He's Odin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, with Shadow Moon, I think that he was written in this episode to be intentionally quiet and played down because he's mourning the loss of his wife. I hope I'm right and that he does improve better, because I did like him in the 100. He was one of my favorite characters in that series. So I'm really hoping that once he finishes his quote-unquote mourning for his, you know, lost wife and whatnot, that he opens up and gets more active. But he was just really solemn and quiet during this episode, I think, because of that.
The other thing that about that cemetery scene, though, is that you also got to put into perspective the fact that he shows a lot of restraint there, and that shows that it's all build up on what on his character is. He's this god of death, but he's also showing the fact that he's got the ability where he doesn't fly off on off the handle. He's able to hold his anger in and then release it when he's forced to. And so he didn't fall to lust or anything like that. And that's going to play in, because we have a god of lust. So you're going to see all this stuff. Everything's going to be based off of, you got these different gods and their abilities. You're going to see buildup of characters and have those going against each other to see. And as long as they keep with the writers are smart, they keep him on that, then, you know, you'll hopefully see a very strong character as the series goes out. It's only 8 episodes this season.
Yeah, they haven't really explained that if he knows he's has any powers, if he has powers. It's very open right now. So that right there was really confusing. And that's one thing that, because this had, I think it'll have potential in the future. I might see more episodes of it, but this one, I was very turned off. It seemed like a hot mess to me. Like, I did like how they did the lynch noose in the prison. It was foreshadowing for what happened later. That was one thing I liked. But there's so many scenes. When you have scenes that are distracting, and I've mentioned this before, when you have something that's so distractingly bad, I'm just like, what is that? Like, what warden meets with a prisoner in private without handcuffs? He's just sitting there with his arms on the side, like, yeah, I'm in jail. I'm a prisoner sitting there with a warden with handcuffs. Like, how's that? And then what prisoner is held across country from his home? he has to like fly across country and then drive many hours like to see his wife just be to make this trip. It's just that made no sense. And then in prison, he's talking about being rich. And then when he gets out, he gets a flight and a rental car, and then he's instantly broke. Like, what was the talking about being rich in the prison scene? And the one that really got me, the one that got me, the scene that just really got me the most was it says they're going to do some writing. They're going to write on the screen. They're going to say somewhere in America. Okay, interesting. And I look down and it's the giant Hollywood sign. Like, no, that's not somewhere in America. You're in Hollywood. You physically pick the one city in America that's a giant sign letting you know where it's at. It's not somewhere. You're in Hollywood. You're right there. And so things like that, it was just silly little scenes like that were distracting to me that constantly were just taking me out of it. And just like, instead of telling me a story, it was this disparate artsy scenes that really, really were trying on my patience.
All right. So now with the prison thing that you had the problem with, if he committed that crime in another state or something like that, he could have been extradited back to that other state in order to serve his prison sentence and everything there. So that could be why he is in that far away
from home. Gotcha. I'll accept it. This time, American gods.
Mills Lane. I'll allow it.
All right, so we got introduced to four gods. We talked about Wednesday. We talked about Technical Boy. Damien's favorite is probably going to be Leprechaun or Subni, the Irish king of lore.
So far, he is my favorite. I like him. I think when this next episode, my ultimate favorite is going to be coming out though.
And so he's played by Pablo Shriver, which is Liev Shriver's brother. And then we have Bilquis, which is the Queen of Sheba we got introduced to. And we got introduced to her in one scene, and that was the scene we talked about at the beginning, which is the scene probably most of the internet is talking about. She basically eats a dude with her vajayjay. And that's the scene that everybody's talking about.
Well, no.
All right.
So what we're going to be covering next week, we're definitely going to be talking about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Mm-hmm. Yes.
For
we're
sure.
Going to cover it. For sure, we're going to hit up American Gods episode 2. So, I mean, regardless of whether what I thought about it, I'm definitely in at least invested for another episode to find out where the hell this is going. I feel like, Fouts, you're going to be on the same boat at least another episode in.
If I didn't have a podcast, I wouldn't be watching it.
You know what? I agree, but I'm going to give it another shot. Maybe I was just really kind of down on the first episode, and like most first episodes, I'm going to give it another opportunity. I'll probably give a wrap up here of Dear White People, because by the time I'm finished up, I'm already five or almost six episodes in, so I feel like I'll be finished because it's only 10 episodes long, so I'll have that season wrapped up too.
Mm-hmm. I'll have two more Fargo, and I'll probably have Boss finished up as well, so we'll be able to finish those.
And everybody will be caught up on Silicon Valley.
Not me. I don't know.
Yeah, I will be. I'll be caught up so I can talk about it.
All right. So we're going to move straight up on to Game On. So we talked about last week, I talked about What Remains of Edith Finch, and I was super pumped up about it because of gameplay that I had at PAX South and at PAX East, being able to watch some extended gameplay. I bought it, was able to play the entire the game in its entirety, which is about roughly 2 to 2.5 hours, depending on how much you're invested in it. I cannot say enough about this game. It reminds me so much of Firewatch and so much of Gone Home. It is basically a collection of stories about a family that is cursed in Washington State. Damien, you know a little bit about something about that, living in the Washington State area. And each story has a change in experience, and it's a life event that's about a different family member, with its stories ranging from the early 1900s all the way up until 1985, 86. The gameplay and tone of the story, though, is varied between family members. So sometimes you're playing as one thing, and sometimes you're doing something else, but everything is always in first person. So the only constants in each one of these stories that's played is that perspective, and also that each family member dies. So you gain a little perspective. Edith is going back to a house after being gone for so long, and in that, she's going through rooms that she was not allowed to be in, or doors that were closed to her by her mother because of certain deaths, and now she's being able to enter those rooms, seeing things and hearing stories that her mother told her and then kind of finding out the past. It's a game that it's about what it feels like to be humbled and astonished, and talks about a world where, you know, you might not know things, but you're learning them. So a six-year-old might not get the concept of what's going on, but a 20-something would. And so it's there's a twist in the story. I won't get into what the twist is. I urge you to play this game if you like stories done through, you know, environmental storytelling, and you like to be able to kind of get and feel a person through that first person view. That's what Edith Finch was to me. It was, again, 9s, 9.5s, 10s in some places for literally almost every website out there. It's $20. It's worth its value. Play it. That's all I need to say about Edith Finch. I also dived into Little Nightmares, which, again, I was really pumped up about going into PAX East. I was trying to reach out to the devs and talk to them. So Tarsier Studios, which is a studio of Bandai Namco, produced this game, and it went across all platforms, so you can play it on whatever you want. I played it on PS4. It's about a 9-year-old girl named Six, and she's trapped in the Maw. That's a surreal area that has like these really sick creatures, and after waking up in the Maw, she decides to escape from its harsh confines, and she's constantly hungry. And it's basically in the likeness of like Inside, but with better graphics, I would say. The gameplay is not quite as pristine as Inside, so Playdead has a little bit more on this game than Tarsier has to me on what it is to have a puzzle game. And it's actually a little bit more simplistic than Inside or games of that nature. However, it's kind of cool because the storytelling is really, really done well. And again, the graphics are really well. It's roughly about a 4.5 to 5 hour gameplay if you're playing it. Six is in a raincoat. She uses a lighter. The lighter lights up places. You can light up candles. You can light up lanterns. And sometimes lighting up that lighter will guide your way to certain places because then it's really dark. I really enjoyed it because, again, me and indie games are like best friends. And anytime I can get my hands on Edith Finch is like the highest critique of like indie games for me. Like, you know, Giant Sparrow did something that when I played Firewatch and I was in the midst of playing that game, I was like, oh, this is what I want. Like, this is the kind of game I want. And so then when I played Edith Finch, I'm like, oh, this is great. I loved Inside. And so playing this game was just kind of like a nice transition. When you're playing games like Nier, or you're playing games like Breath of the Wild and all these 60, 100-hour, 120 hours, to have a nice sitting of a 2.5-hour game to me is like, oh, this is like comfort food. I can just play this game. I know what I'm getting. I'll be done with it by the time I sit with my play session, and I don't have to think. I just have to listen. I just have to be immersed in it. So, again, either game, Little Nightmares and Edith Finch, either one of those games I would recommend to somebody. $20 each for each of those games. A lot of fun.
What would you rate them?
If I were to rate Edith Finch, I would. I felt like Firewatch to me, it felt like Campo Santo. Like, I was really excited. And so Giant Sparrow, when I talked to those devs, again, we talked about it last week, a lot of people from USC, a lot of they did Unfinished Swan, and that game was fantastic from last gen. Probably a 9 to a 9.5. Like, I really enjoyed the story. I was super invested, and I didn't realize how much I like these walking sims until I played this, and I go, oh yeah, you know what? This is me. Because as a dad and somebody who doesn't have a shit ton of time to play 140-hour games, if I can, on my day off, play a 2.5-hour game, get a story, and feel emotional about it, this is what I want. If it, as far as playing Little Nightmares, I Inside was a much better game. Gameplay was much better with that. Graphics were much better with Little Nightmares. If I had to rate that game, I'd call it more of a 7.5 at most. I had fun, and I would recommend it to somebody, but I would recommend it at a discounted price. Even $20 to me seems a little bit more than I would be willing to pay for it on the back end. this is more of a game that I'd recommend for maybe $9.99.
Okay.
And another game that I've been playing this week, I got it on Tuesday, or Friday of last week, pardon me, Friday of last week, was Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. Yes, this game is so much fun. This is like playing Mario on my phone, but like when I come home from work at night, I can just like knock out a bunch of these kart races. And so it's everything that you got on the Wii with all of the extended packages. You get all of these characters, including some new characters from that they added in DLC. I'm having a blast, whether I'm playing online, whether I'm just fighting against myself. It's just Mario. Like, Mario is comfort food. It's really just, I don't have to think a lot. I'm just playing a race, and if I lose, great, and if I win, great, and that sort of stuff is fun to me. The only thing that bums me out is I don't have enough friends on the Switch to play with, because I'd like to play against people. But
you need to add, do you have N64 Josh added?
I don't have Josh added on. I would love to add Josh on. And
add Josh. Add reach out to Too Loud TX add Noel Zero.
I don't know if I'll be good, but it would just be fun to play with other people. The only thing that's crappy about this is like this is the kind of game that I would sit with headphones on and bullshit with friends, and you can't do that yet. And so the fact that they're waiting to do that, like this is still done with through the phone if you want to do the online gameplay and set up all that stuff with the chat and blah, 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 is kind of a bummer. But other than that, like the game is fun as hell, and I would recommend it to anybody who has a Switch, because at this point, what do you have? You have Breath of the Wild and what? I mean, there's a lot of independent games, and if you're not an indie fan, this is the next big game to drop for them. So I would definitely recommend Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. This is the game that actually...
Have you played Split Screen yet with kids?
I have not. This is non-screen week at school, and so I got it, and my wife was like, no, absolutely not. We're no computer, no TV, no nothing, because they are promoting it, so like we can't do that up until now. But in light of recent events with my youngest, this might be an opportunity to like have an escape route to like hang out for a little while, and so I think we're going to take advantage of it this weekend. Again, Mario Kart 8, if you have a Nintendo Switch, please, please buy it.
And any console exclusivity between those games? Like, I think some of them you can't play on all systems, right?
No, it's a bummer. Like, because you have it on Wii, and because like if you were to have it on Wii U and I have it on Switch, I don't believe that you can mix and mingle this type of thing. I think I believe it's the kind of separation of state and religion here on this part.
Right. And Edith Finch is just PlayStation and PC, right? No, yes. Xbox.
Edith Finch is a PlayStation exclusive. If you have Little Nightmares, you can play it on all console and PC. So that's okay. Open to everybody. And both games, again, $19.99. If you're going to get Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, it is the full tilt boogie. So you're paying $59.99 in order to have it.
So I'm jumped into something that I'm going to... It looks like I'm going to actually be reviewing this game, too, when it actually fully comes out later on the 26th of this month. But it's Portal Knights Trial. Now, you have to kind of look this one up right now. It's not actually... You don't, like, go into the betas or anything like that. You have to actually type in the full name Portal Knights on Xbox to find it, at least on the Xbox side. But basically, it's like, you know, when Chris is talking comfort food and stuff like that with games, it's kind of what this is. And it's building... I mean, on Steam, and you know, it's actually building, getting a lot of Steam. It's if you took, say, Minecraft, but gave it more of a prettier, kind of like a prettier graphic scheme, and if you mix Minecraft and Legend of Zelda, you get Portal Knights, and it's being published by 505 Games, and it's got like a whole quest system. You can build, you can do all the different things like that. You can mine, you can craft. You actually have a player, your characters aren't blocky. You can actually build your characters up a little bit, but it actually has a role. It has NPCs you interact with. You also, it's four players. Some of the people that will actually compare it to Diablo, when you get into the dungeons and stuff, but it has the cartoony graphics that go back more to like a Nintendo title, and it's a lot of fun to play. Like, just I played it with my son, and we're running around on it, and we can't wait for the title to come out. But you can also do it allows you to do split screen co-op, And it's also running at 60 frames a second, and which actually is really nice for a PC port to console to actually on console. It is actually running better than it runs on PC. But it has the monster battles and everything like that. It screams Legend of Zelda. You have three classes you play as. You play as either a knight, a mage, or a ranger. And you can have up to four people play in a party. And you have to think about your class builds when you're going in, what weapons you're using, what skills you're going to go for particular situations. And so it actually starts to feel a little bit like a Destiny Light raid when you're going into some of the dungeon stuff. So I can't wait for the full game to come out. We're going to actually pick it up, so we'll be able to have test it with both my... We'll have four people playing it, so I'll be able to talk about what it's like when you're in a full party and a full
review. What are some of the Minecraft feels? You said it kind of felt like Minecraft.
Building. It's a cube. It's cube-based, but the skinning and stuff on it is very bright and vibrant, but you actually do the Minecraft. Like you go down and it's all squares you're going through. They're rounded squares, but when you take things, but you can do farming and stuff in it. I mean, you can build up a house, but the reason it's called Portal Knight is because you build these portals and you go to these different worlds. The biomes are actually completely different inhabited worlds that you're going through, and you go and it follows a storyline. You can actually choose, like, if you want a short storyline, you can choose small, or you can choose medium, or you can choose large. So you can actually choose the how in depth you want to go.
Gotcha. Okay, that's cool.
I'll have a lot more to talk about it here in the future as I get into it. Another game that I was playing this week is Titanfall 2. You guys have gotten a couple updates since the last time I played it, and I got into there and they've done a lot. Like first thing I noticed is major changes to the weapon balancing, because back when Fouts and I were really playing it quite a bit, along with Captain Caveman and stuff, there were certain guns that were the go-to guns and it would just piss you off. But like playing it now, everything seems like it's in that right spot. And so I've been having a lot more fun with it. Fouts?
There is a new DLC coming out for it as well.
Oh, when's that?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure when it's supposed to drop. I know that they've been announcing it and talking it up quite a bit. Firestrike, I think, is what it's called.
Mm-hmm. That's actually the reason why I was like looking. I saw the ads for it. I'm like, I need to get back into this. I have a lot of games I need to get back into, but that's a little more for the Backlog Chronicles. But it's been it's one of those games where when you get into it and you're playing it, you're like, why did I ever quit playing this? And you're like, oh yeah, Destiny, or oh yeah,
Oh yeah, I play all
whatever,
games.
Whatever. Yeah, Conan Wangbar, got in the way for a while.
Yeah. When you play as many in variety of games that Damian Nash does, you're like, oh, what happened there? Oh, yeah, I'm me, and I play all the games all the time. That's why I didn't go back to this one.
Yeah. But it's definitely, people need, it's actually, I feel right now, Titanfall's at a good spot. Well, one, it's a good spot price point because Amazon's got a crazy-ass sale on it. That, you can go on, you can get the game and jump in it, and you're not going to feel left behind. And in fact, you might do better now because of all the balancing that they've done. It's just a much more solid game at the moment.
Excellent.
Oh, actually, and there was one other thing that I needed to bring up on here that I was trying to figure out what I've been playing this week. And Xbox Live Games with Gold, backwards compatibility, brought out The Forced Unleashed 2. And if there's one thing that just screams, and it's, we're recording on May the 4th be with you, so we got to talk a little Star Wars in here with this. This game, man, it's like, the graphics, yeah, some of the stuff you see on it, you're like a little bit like, what's going on? But you definitely, if you got Xbox Live, go download. If you don't, if you don't have the Xbox Gold, just go pick it up at GameStop. It's backwards compatible now. You can play it. And it's a good story, a lot of fun, and it will make you just want to pull your hair out for why there isn't a force-wielding, saber-usage you know, PvP style game out there, because if that game ever releases, Disney, please put this out, license it to somebody. I don't think I'll ever play another game.
If Disney is much smarter into where, when and where they're going to be making their money from the Star Wars franchise. We can see it already with where they're putting it and how deep they're going into it. So it's just to be stuff like that. What, there's such a game breadth of games in the Star Wars universe. Which ones worked great? Which ones people wanted more of, or pieces they wanted more of? And then I definitely see that coming in the future with them. They're not going to hold back on anything when it comes to Star Wars or their Marvel universes. That's their big money stuff. They're beating up ESPN right now, but they're letting Marvel and their regulars and Star Wars franchises kick booty and grow. But last week we talked about an article in The Atlantic, and we don't normally talk about articles that are polarizing, but then Chris brought up another one this week. He's like, hey, this one is polarizing people like crazy right now. And we even touched a little bit about esports recently. And the article was on the site Glixel, and the title was, "As Esports Explodes, Will Valve's Dota 2 Be Left for Dead?" And some of the main topics of the article, or one of the main ones, was it was comparing Dota 2 esports versus other esports, and really kind of showed the parallel, the differences in that how Valve really, they open market everything originally, but has been adding more tournaments that have such high dollar values to it that the third party tournaments can't keep up. And how other esports are more flat with the tournaments and having some franchising involved in that as well. And this is really polarized and got a lot of people yelling. And they're kind of similar to last week's article in The Atlantic because of the topic, because of some of the hard stances the author takes, and because the author seemed to be all over the place and didn't make one consensus point at the end. I think it got people all yapping and yelling. So, Chris?
Yeah, the biggest deal with this is for Valve itself. They don't promote as high. They want more dollar values coming their way versus the promoting of the actual esport itself. So they want the income to come to Valve, but they don't want to promote the sport itself as much. And I think that's the biggest issue, because Dota was really popular from, I don't know, about 2012, 2013 to 2014, 2015 at its peak. And there are still people that are very hardcore Dota. And I follow people that are very hardcore Dota on Twitter. However, people have moved on to other things. We've talked about a few things that people have moved on. So we've talked about PlayerUnknown. We've talked about, you know, other games that are now the thing that people follow. And I'm not talking about just MMOs. We're talking about about other things. But the entry level in esports, I was talking to an esports owner over my weekend with PAX East, and I'm not going to divulge names or anything like that, but the general question was, is like, how do you guys, what's your market? How do you guys make your money? And the direct answer to that question was, I don't know. There's no method to the madness. There's no how X equals Y, or, you know, X equals this plus this. It's almost like smoke and mirrors. And so for Valve to not promote a sport which they know makes money, and they can lower the cost, lower the entry level for this, I think is the biggest hindrance for Valve. It's been their major thing. Like, they have games that people want to play. There are things that they want to involve themselves with, but they keep alienating themselves so far away from mainstream that what it does is at the point of, I want to play, and eventually it's like, you know what, I don't want to have to go through this anymore. I don't want to have to deal with this anymore. And so they play themselves out of it. And so I think that's the problem with where Valve is right now with esports.
Yeah, and I think it wasn't as much of Valve putting a barrier to entry for players to enter, because theirs is pretty easy for players to enter. It was a barrier to entry for tournaments.
Tournaments
to enter and become... to get the big name teams, because in other esports, if you put a tournament into a hole in the esports schedule, like there's a big 3-month block, you put it a month and a half between each of them, you put your tournament in, a lot of big teams are going to show up to it as long as the prize money is reasonable. Well, Valve stuff is so high dollar, and they have, what, 4 or 5 during the year right now, that it's and because they announce them so close to or so late in the year, that some other tournaments have lost people because of that. So they're not as involved with their third-party tournaments as other games are. And one of the big questions was, should they change? And that right there was one of the big things in that article that I found interesting. It was talking about Valve's culture as an employer and a game developer. Should they change their culture? Or do they even need to? Because they can continue giving out $30 million a year or whatever it was total between their tournaments and continue to get enough people involved in them and playing their game that they'll continue making money until the next phase happens. And the next phase that it talked about is where a lot of the capital is coming from. And we're not talking about game developer capital, we're talking about investment capital. Investment capital drives everything in America. Investment capital is going into franchising. It's kind of like your soccer leagues overseas and things like that, where it's the franchise brand that branches off into many different sports. And they really highlighted one big esports franchise, Cloud9, which has many big teams in many sports. And it's franchising like that, where all the money from the investment capital goes to Cloud9. They find and develop the talent for the teams. They bring in the sponsorship that goes out to all of those, so it's not one sponsor per team. And the revenue that comes from those teams in both sponsorship capital and winnings goes to the franchise, and then everybody gets paid from there. And they have bonus structures and all that stuff set in. But it's very similar to how other pro sports teams are set up. And it also locks people in. It locks people into long-term contracts. You don't get all these team swaps and stuff like that. So that is basically setting the table for the way of the future of esports. And the article was all around and kind of slowly hit the point, but not very hard at the end, is should Valve change to that? And the basically at this point, doesn't look like there's any desire at all for Valve to change and go that way.
No, to Cajun's point, I mean, they started with 29 teams in 2014. They're down to 13 in 2017. So
tournaments, right?
Tournaments.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what the basis is the fact that the less tournaments, less money involved. But the thing of it is if Valve's able to procure money that is high enough to make what 29 events equals in 13 events, then they don't really care. Or if it's really close, they don't really care. So they're not going to exert themselves to more tournaments if they can, you know, have their clout and then have it in that amount of money in the same in like 13 tournaments, you know, if they cut the difference. So again, whether Valve should change or whether Valve should not change, the article kind of alludes to the fact that they shouldn't change. I think that maybe there's a room to make improvements and also look into different things aside from Dota 2, which they was a context of a lot of the story. But they're talking about a dying MMO, where as opposed to there are a lot of things that they could be involving themselves into that are a little more current.
Yeah, if Dota 2 is to continue in esports, you can only keep one game going for so long. It would need to be Dota 3, and we all know Valve can't count to 3. So the likelihood of them actually continuing in esports on that front, well, they'll either have to make a 3 or come up with a different game, because Valve cannot count to 3. We all know this.
So the other thing with esports on the thing is that esports is now going to become a full scholarship rideable sport for colleges. In fact, University of Utah, of all the places in the world to start it out, University of Utah is going to offer up the first full-fledged scholarships for esports teams. That is huge. I mean, That I mean, you can also, you can go onto their website, you can look up like criteria and stuff that they're looking at for things. So you can actually check your stats to find out if you would be eligible to be able to get on and get like a half ride scholarship or anything. And it's pretty sick. My middle son right now, he actually, if you look at statistics wise and stuff like that with the games that he plays, he's sitting right there, right around half scholarship eligibility. So that's pretty crazy. And they're looking at the next place where they think that the colleges will start picking up will probably be in California and in Washington State, which makes a lot of sense because of all the software developments and the game developers in those areas. But yeah, it was a crazy article to read, and the fact that that's changing, that's starting to show, because I mean they're measuring on the fact of, like, you know, brainwave activity, all that stuff during it as a form of a sport, because there's already, you know, they view chess as a sport, so why not bring in the games? And I love that the colleges are looking into it and looking outside the box.
Yeah, and there's many competitions like that have been sanctioned by either NCAA or intercollegiate sports. But we were talking previously on the esports front a couple episodes back about esports will never go into the Olympics. And it may or it may not, but that's the long term. That is the final iteration of esports if it makes it to the Olympics. That's the end. If the NCAA starts sanctioning tournaments, that puts that one barrier between them and pro tournaments like the NFL and MLB and all that other stuff. And so that helps legitimize it even more so if the NCAA starts sanctioning tournaments and puts like other esports leagues, MLG and stuff like that, on the next tier above where they're looking for those contracts. So this is one start to that. And I can definitely see something like that happening in the near future with us. All right, so rounding out this. So next week, I know for me, I'm going to be a lot further along on Witcher 3 Bloodwine DLC. I may or may not be done it, but I'll definitely want to talk some more about it because there's definitely some awesome things happening right now in that one I want to talk about. Anything on your gaming front you'll want to cover next week?
Yep, I'm going to be playing Nier Automata. Like, that's not even a question. Like, I'm playing it next week. It will happen.
That means I'm probably going to be as well,
because I'm so into this. Like, I've been listening to Waypoint, and Patrick Klepek and Austin Walker have been talking about this game nonstop, about how the storyline is amazing and this is potential game of the year. And so if it's this early and we're talking game of the year, chances are it's going to be in everybody's box for game of the year. So I want to have like Breath of the Wild, and we have Nier and Horizon Zero Dawn. We're talking three of the top games already in the first half of the season. So I want to have that as a game that we're playing. So we'll definitely be talking about it for sure.
With me, I'm probably going to be doing a little bit more. I'm trying to test out character builds right now in Elder Scrolls Online, but jumping back between that and Neverwinter. But I also I want to get back into the last Final Fantasy game that I got around Christmas time. I haven't really played much into it, and with all this talk of The Witcher and all that stuff, it's made me want to go back to playing that game.
Have you been playing Wangbar online?
I have been playing Wangbar online. I'm working on a story on Wangbar online.
Now,
it's an erotic tale.
Now, remember what you say.
That nobody will read.
Short tale, long story.
Yeah. Now remember, when you say what we're going to cover next week, those are games you need to play next week, because we're going to talk about what we're going to cover. You're covered. Not the I want to. It's the I'm going to.
No, we're going to be playing Nier for sure. Like, that's not even a question. Like, that's happening.
Excellent.
Elder Scrolls will definitely be talked about, and I'm going to be jumping into the PvP on there and talking about how it's changed from the basically playing in the alpha on the PC to the console changes thus far, and what's to come with the Morrowind.
Cajun, let's hop in the hype train and talk about something that we're going to be talking about soon on DLC.
Next up, is the first thing we want to talk about is one of the big games of the year. And me and Chris have been playing this. It's Breath of the Wild, and it's getting a DLC, the first DLC ever in Zelda. And what this DLC is we talked about previously that it has hard mode, which is one of the first times I've heard of hard mode being locked behind DLC. It might have happened in the past, but this is one of the first times I've heard of that. Chris?
Yeah, upscaling enemies by one and the regen health on the enemies I think is awesome. Like, if you're going to do this, don't just, like, make these enemies sponges. Like, actually make them – make that things that you're – it's going to make the game harder. This part is going to make the game harder.
Right. And also stealth is less effective because – when I found out later in the game, when you sneak behind, you do the stealth attack, it does so much more damage that you just, if you're sneaking up on him, I just find the one that has the color palette, that's the toughest one, and do sneak attack on him if I'm going to start an attack. And that makes it less effective. And also your stealth armor in the game is a much weaker armor. So it really makes you focus on your build.
One of the things that I really like about what they're adding to the DLC is the tracking every step that Link has taken over the last 200 hours. What really helps you out is it backtracks all these steps. That's fine. But then there's these places that you haven't been before and you go, oh, crap, I actually haven't been over there. Like, it'll point out spots that you haven't been before. And so then you can say to yourself, maybe I should go over there. Maybe there's going to be a cave or maybe there's going to be a tower I can go to. And so then it makes it a little more interesting. And what's nice about this is if you have owned it, right, and then you've played it, it'll backtrack that and it'll let you know where those steps are for the last 200 hours where you've been. So that makes things a little bit more a little easier. So it's not just from the point that you purchased the DLC. It's actually from your last 200 hours. Pretty awesome.
Exactly. Because that would have helped me out a lot when it came to finding the last towers. Because I found, as I mentioned before, I found a little over 100, 101, 102 of the shrines, not tower shrines myself, and that I wanted to be a completionist on those and get them all. And I just looked on a map, found kind of where it was on a map that I didn't have it on my map, and then I went in that area and found it. I didn't do a full guide, but I did cheese it to get them. But if I'd have had this, I'd be like, oh, I was never even there because many of those towers would have showed up on my radar, would have showed up on my seeker if I'd have just been in that area. But the map's so huge, I just never went anywhere near it where it would have pinged, and I would have just turned the corner and found the shrine. So yeah, I love that part of it as well. You're also going to get hovering enemies. It's going to have these little triangle three balloon things that looks like they're going to be tiered up with powerful enemies on there. And if you make it to the top of any of these hovering enemy scenarios in this new DLC, there's going to be a good prize waiting for you up there. So I think that's going to be interesting to play with, and also going to make you use that that one power you get from the bird god dude and go up to the next ones. I think
there's a couple of little small ones that I'm going to talk about. One is the travel medallion. It gives you waypoint placement, which is really key. I mean, it just tells you where you can waypoint and you can spot check wherever you're going to fast travel to. The other one is the Korok mask, which is the Korok locator. It shakes and shimmies when you're near a Korok, which is really helpful because those things are just everywhere. And a lot of people aren't. Remember, we talked about this about a month ago, where spots are. But honestly, when you're in the middle of a game, I'm not thinking of where Derek's telling me that I'm supposed to head to a rock and then move left and then move right. Mm-hmm. It'll shake. It'll give you an idea where you're supposed to go. And it'll open up some of those Koroks, which, again, helps hearts, helps stamina. It helps a lot of things that you're going to be needing in the game. So I think
helps your weapon slots.
Do you know the other thing that's really cool is you can switch. One of the things that's in addition to this is you can translate from American back to Japanese in this game. And it's just one of those little sidebars. A lot of the stuff that Zelda is adding is literally stuff that devs use that go left to right in order to like create a game. And they're like, oh, well, that would be like really cool if we took the voiceover that was in American and just switched it over to Japanese. Oh, well, we can do that. It takes like 2 seconds. We're going to make that part of the DLC and then added it in.
Yeah. But the real important part of that is they always had the multiple languages in Zelda, but now you can mix and match. That's the biggest thing. So you can be playing with in Japanese, like the Japanese dialogue is being told to you, but the text... the subtext is in English. So it's for people who maybe want to learn. But the real problem is that there's not a lot of audio dialogue in Zelda, so it's going to be few and far between when it comes to actually being talked to, learning anything from that. But that is the one feature they're putting in there, so you can mix and match the audio for learning the languages. Brandon?
Chris, I don't know if you know it, but Persona 5, you can actually download the Japanese version of the audio for the entire game.
Yeah, and that's how people played it months and months and months and months ago when they were trying to convert it over, and they were able to do it with non-region lock. So kind of cool stuff. Like that stuff is very easy for game developers to do, and for them to add it into a game is at no charge. For this game, it seems like they're trying to find reasons to charge you. So like that those are added bonuses into the Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild.
One big thing is the actual challenge mode that's coming with Breath of the Wild is the Trial of the Sword. And it's 45 rooms of tough enemies that tier up difficulty at each room. That's a ton of different fighting rooms to go through. But you get the reward at the end. And the reward is your Master Sword stays charged. It doesn't lose charge and you have to wait for it. So that does two things. One, you don't have to wait for it to power back up to use again. And two, it stays charged, so it's going to be doing 60 attack at all times, not 30, which that's double the attack, so it's always charged up by that. That's a big reward, but it's a lot of stuff to get through to get there, I think.
Yeah. I'm going to call this a tip charge because that's what it is. It's a little charge to your tip and let you know that this is just the beginning part of the $20 DLC and the fact that they have a little bit more coming because they have a lot more. There's a story mode DLC that's still coming. So if you were even questioning the $20, this alone to me, it says, yep, this is. And so if you're playing this game and you're like, man, I'm let's say 60 hours, 80 hours in, do you stop right now and wait for the DLC to come? I might, because I mean, a lot of this other stuff is going to be opening up. I'm going to have to play it anyway. So if I'm playing it, I might as well wait a few weeks. Wait for this, or what is it, June? Late June?
Middle summer. June, late June? They haven't summer. Given a date yet, sometime in the summer. Yeah.
Let's just pray it's sometime in June, like after E3. And then they come out with a DLC sometime in late August, which gives you another opportunity to play again. This reminds me a lot of The Witcher, where it's giving you really, really good chunks of story and giving you reasons to come back to playing a game that you've originally paid whatever amount for. I think they took a lot of care with Breath of the Wild. And for folks who are Zelda fans, this is well worth its weight for the $20 that they're asking for it.
Yep, exactly. And to finish it up, the $20 that Chris was saying, you pay only once for this DLC, and you get two packages. You get this download, and you get another one. You cannot buy this separately. You cannot buy just this one and the seventh one. It's all or nothing when it comes to this DLC.
That's a big deal. That's a real big deal because people would potentially just buy the story DLC. At least most people would, especially compared to this. Yeah, it's all or nothing deal. So that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Now we're gonna pass it over to Mr. Damien, who had some experience with a previous game that just had its trailer drop. Darksiders 3.
Yeah, I was not, honestly, I wasn't expecting this because originally, you know, that studio at one point was talking about closing down, and then I went and saw the trailer, and listen, you know, we talk an awful lot on here about Disney and how they've been putting, you know, female protagonists at the forefront. Fury is a female character. She fights with a whip, with a razor-bladed whip that actually the first thing I thought of when I saw it was Underworld with the silver whips that they had in the very first film that were used to cut up the lichens or whatnot. But it also looks like it also looks a lot like Bayonetta if you've ever played that game and she fights with her hair. It's set to basically be a happy ground or like find the middle ground between happy ground. What the hell, man? Middle ground between Darksiders 1 and Darksiders 2. Darksiders 1 being very arcadey, and Darksiders 2 being still gamey, but it was more like a faster-paced style game, like a speedrun game. This is supposed to find some good middle ground in between.
Okay, happy ground is also known as a happy trail, so I just want to let you know that right off the start.
Also, oh, man. God damn it. I was trying
to... Also...
It's because I'm...
this game is from some of the ex-Vigil game devs that created Darksiders 1 and 2. So this studio had disbanded. A lot of the devs got back together again, came under the new Gunfire Games, which is based out of Austin, Texas. Pretty awesome because we were just there for PAX South. So a lot of those guys are based out of that area. Cajun, I know you said you're at least 4 hours away, but I just want to give a shout out to Texas in general because a lot of these smaller studios who are indie studios are based out of Texas. I know your state's rather large, but that's what she said. It is a ground now for a lot of indie studios where Canada and Toronto and like all of Vancouver, those were areas where people were doing indie games. Now Texas is an area that's going to do those, that are doing a lot of those games.
Gearbox but, just moved down the street from me. So
yes.
It is so moving like corporate
they're,
offices.
They're moving into, and the thing of it is like, it's kind of a hub for a middle section of America where people can go from East Coast, West Coast, go down to Texas, still nice area. And they all have the tax bracket apparently from what I've been told in order to create these games where it still makes sense as opposed to moving into other areas. But all of these folks have a lot of the folks that have worked on this game from Gunfire worked on the original, which is a huge deal because they have the backstory of 1 and 2, which, by the way, Darksiders 1 is farther in the future than 2 and 3. It is the post-apocalyptic version of what happens in 2 and 3 because they happen within like they happen really close to each other. So this is kind of awesome that this story is still almost like a prequel to the original. And when I was listening to IGN, I was listening to Alana Pierce, who had gone down to the studio and watched some of this game and played some of this game, actually. And so the lead character, when she faced characters from Darksiders 1, was super fast. It was able to kick ass, like, immediately. And then as soon as she played against characters from Darksiders 2, she was getting her ass kicked. So it's a combination of Darksiders 1 and 2 as far as the gameplay for character from 3 in order to try to keep up with, you know, an in-between, and they have to kind of balance that out a little bit.
Yeah, and this is an action RPG. And for me, this it's always been on my radar because whenever, after I finished some of my favorite action RPGs, Kingdoms of Amalur being one, it's like, what games are like it? And I all kept seeing Darksiders popping up because I wanted something with a little RPG, but a lot of action, and this one kept popping up as having that. And so I'm
a good one
in Darksiders 3 for sure, because right now I have a lot more games in my queue in the high def range and deep story range that, I mean, I go back to Darksiders 1 and 2, but this one would definitely be piquing my interest when it comes out in 2018 because of especially the action part of it.
Just a heads up, they are selling Darksiders 1 and 2 as a combo pack right now. Don't be confused when you see the price tag on it, because it's like $39, I think it's $39.99 for the two games. But they have it as the Fury pack. And so don't think that you're getting Darksiders 3 for $39.99. You would actually be getting the first original, Darksiders 1 and 2, that they have on the marketplace right now. So, guys, gay characters could already exist in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
All right, so I have something to say about this immediately off Jump Street. I was interacting with Cassidy Moser from IGN. She does their Snapchat. And my thoughts and theories on this are, first of all, welcome to real life. If Marvel's going to be acting with normal society and how things are, in real life, why are we living off of old lore and trying to hide behind that in comic books? Like, deal with social justice issues, deal with things that happen in real life. Stop pretending that this is something, we're not 1960 characters. We're 2000 characters.
Exactly.
There are obviously gay, lesbian, transgender, whatever. Like, it doesn't even, to be quite honest, I don't care about their backstory when it comes to their sexual preference. That's like a sub story to whatever their background is. And for people that do care, find a new hobby, man, because like there are people from Earth, from different planets, from whatever. So like to me, it's so wide open that it should be a reflection of what society is today and not a reflection of society that was 40 years ago.
Exactly. I feel the same way. It's like almost like bringing that up as a card. Like with everything we talk about with, Netflix and everything else, bringing up the stuff, of course the Marvel Cinematic Universe needs to roll with that and keep up to par, because, it just makes sense. And, it's not going to change the entertainment value to anybody. It's not going to change any of that stuff. It's just making it more real you know, dealing with these characters as opposed to dealing with what Chris said, you know, going back, you know, 40 years ago and stuff. This was based
off an article where Gunn was talking about the fact that, you know, some of the characters from the MCU may or may not, there probably are, but we're not really sure which ones. And, you know, the fact that he had, this is all based upon the fact that now we've got Guardians of the Galaxy 2 coming out, and how does it affect, you know, the MCU as far as anything that deals with Avengers. It's just, the fact that this is a topic, and he was even dancing around it, to me, is still like, dude, don't dance around this. Like, and I get why he's doing it, because he's trying to protect himself, but man, just come out and say who cares.
Yeah, so my opinion, and you guys can hate on me, and if a listener does not like my opinion, I am sorry, I apologize, but this is my opinion. Who cares? If somebody's gay, they're gay. If they're not, they're not. I mean, drawing attention to it is worse than saying, okay, we only have one gay character in this one. We have two in this one. If you got a piece of paper with five black spots, five red spots, and four yellow spots, there's going to be a social injustice outcry because there's only four freaking yellow spots. Who cares? They're spots. These characters are based off of characters that have been around for years and years and years.
Yeah, who cares? Doctor Strange is the one that comes out to be gay?
I honestly, like, it doesn't really matter. Like, I think it's really wide open right at this point.
Oh, and no, it's Doctor Strange. I'm putting my flag in the sand that I think that relationship was a friendship relationship with Night Nurse number 2, and it's Doctor Strange that's going to be the one he was talking about as a someone already exists.
If that's the case, I honestly, any of the storylines to me, none of them are like, you know, plant the flag in the sand. Like, you know what I mean? Nothing is plant that flag in the sand with any of these characters from MCU. So I think it could literally be anybody. I think he wasn't defining it because I don't think any of them have been defined by Marvel, which is what's holding the MCU back. Like, it's like them not saying, like, this is going to continue in the comics, so we cannot say that. Like, we don't want to have a conversation about that because it's going to have to reflect whatever the comics say. And the funny thing of it is like, I thought the comics were progressive enough that they were okay with this. I mean, Jesus, we're talking about stuff that, like, to me, this is so, like, 10 years ago. Like, I don't, it baffles me that this is, like, still things that come up. But I'm not insensitive enough to think that it isn't, because I watch my friends on Twitter who have to defend themselves on a regular basis, which sucks. So it's like, listen, mm-hmm. If there are trans and gay and lesbian in my life while I'm on my Twitter, why are they not in my comic? But like, it should be that way. Like, it should absolutely be that way. And it totally just flips me that that's not the case, because to me, that's the norm. And it's funny that it's not the norm for other people. And it just is. I don't have much more to say. I'm going to get fired up a little more than I already am.
Hey, the thing is that it's just, I mean, when it comes down to it, it's just we understand that it's just life is life, and it needs to be able to be displayed how it is, you know? Why hide it?
All right, so let's move on to the World War Z trailer.
World War Z 2, not trailer.
Conversation.
Yeah, announcement. So basically they announced a director, and they got a big get. World War Z 2 got David Fincher as a director.
That's huge.
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, David Fincher has done Seven, The Game, Fight Club, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Curious Case of Benjamin Button, Gone Girl. He executive produced House of Cards. I mean, there's no date set for this, but to get a director at the caliber of David Fincher to direct your sequel, not even the original, the sequel to your first movie, which was graded with mixed reviews. It did well in the box office. It did well enough to get a sequel, but it wasn't universally praised. I enjoyed it. I liked the take of the high action zombies. I found it fun and entertaining, and I would definitely watch a sequel no matter who directed it. But with David Fincher directing it, I am definitely watching that sequel.
To me, he has a strong view of where this is going. Like, he has a real plan. And so he came to them and said, listen, this is what I think you need to do in order to make this thing big. And they were like, yep, I'm all in, and they bought it. And so that's why he's the director.
Brad Pitt really liked the character, And he's been in many of David Fincher's movies. And he went to him and said, hey, I need you to direct this one right here. And I want to talk to the studio and give you creative control because I'm signed on and I can get you to direct it. And let's do something awesome with this because, you know, David Fincher likes directing Brad Pitt. And you know, Brad Pitt likes working with David Fincher. So I think Brad Pitt had a huge influence on getting him involved to make this even bigger and better because he liked where this story could go and was probably getting some pushback.
Yeah, I mean, because the original one was it went through so many reshoots because they took away like half the film. Like half the film was they axed it because it was following the books, and the books were a lot darker. It was a lot darker, and they said that they couldn't at the time. They didn't want to portray that on film because there was a lot of stuff happened to Brad Pitt's wife and whatnot.
Yeah, I don't know if David Fincher can do dark, though. Sarcasm alert.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's what I'm thinking. I know. That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking, like, with him coming on, maybe they're going to – I'm hoping that they fix that and pull that back.
One of my favorite movies of all time was Seven. Love that movie, by the way, P.S. And House of Cards, as he directs him as full circle, it's kind of a cool thing. So – we're going to talk about the Defenders trailer. We watched the original teaser in the elevator. This thing expanded upon that, like, blown up.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the fact that Jessica Jones, that immediate intro to him coming in as the lawyer, I thought was like, she's like, who the F are you? And he's like, I'm your lawyer. And she's like, okay.
Yeah. Like they're going to go right away to forming them together because they set the table. They don't have to do this, oh, how are they going to know each other? How is this together? They got the night nurse. She's set up to bring them all together. The table is fully set. We've had 5 seasons. Let's go. End of episode one, they have better all have talked to each other, or starting episode two, that's when the meeting started, so we can get going with this. You don't need a lot of setup on this series to get this going because you already have the binding. You have the Nick Fury of this series. Let's go.
Iron Fist.
But the thing is...
No, go ahead. Oh, no, go ahead.
One of the things is that there is one defender that they have set aside that's not in this. You don't see him in it at all. And... Where's you know, we don't have Frank Castle in there yet.
Jesus, you're gonna bring him up again. They brought Frank Castle is my man.
I see Elektra's in it. But you know, Frank Castle's part of the Defenders. So in this iteration,
to me, he shows up at the tail end of this whole damn thing, and just like
that would be bullshit.
It's not bullshit if it's gonna jump him into his own series.
Right, he's getting his own series.
I think it's gonna do. You know what I thought was BS was like the whole Luke Cage Iron Fist thing. I'm like, oh, so really these are the two guys that you're gonna cause to meet each other? And then the best part is like Iron Fist still has the one fist. Like, dude, when is he gonna gain the other fist? Like, he has two fists, and they both like they charge up.
No, though. So, I think they can both glow.
His training's not complete.
Wait.
His training isn't complete. Okay, that's the problem.
Okay, I thought they both could glow for some reason. And that just could be a misconception on my part. I thought they both could glow.
The comedic stuff at the end was really cool where she says classy. I thought that was really funny. Like, I don't want them sitting around talking to each other about how each other is badass a lot. Like, let's just get to the thing. And then also Daredevil with the little wrap around his head. I thought we were past that part. Like, you were Daredevil, that guy, season one. Why are we still doing that? Where's the mask?
Yeah.
Well, it's probably because he's sitting in this. It looks like he was still, like, maybe he was meeting up as a lawyer, then they were getting attacked. And so he just had to quickly hide his
right. Exactly. Identity. Because he's the only one that has to hide his identity at this point. Really, Iron Fist should. Danny Rand should at this point. But why he doesn't is completely up to him. Yeah, so he's the only one that has to, Elektra? So it's probably something that was just called out of nowhere.
Why is Elektra this?
Well, because
she raises up.
Yeah, because of Daredevil season two. She was set up in the revive chamber to come back as something very different. And we all got the guise that when she went into this hand's revive chamber, she was going to come back evil. And this is her evil iteration. That's what it looks like.
So is her evil iteration going to be the person that stands in the background and watches everybody kick ass in that hallway, and then she's still there because you see her all the way in the far back on that pan. They pan back. They show everybody do one of their moves, and she's standing back there walking.
Well, no. I think they go to the elevator, and they go down and are breathing hard after that fight when she comes and kicks their butt or does something there. Because I think it's her as the evil one comes in there, does something, and the elevator scene that we saw in the teaser was them after that fight, after she puts them in their place. And so she's the big, powerful villain they're going to be fighting, with the boss being Sigourney Weaver's character.
The muscle.
And Sigourney Weaver's character being very intelligent, very cunning, very smooth. And actually, it was pretty awesome to watch her. Like, on screen again, it was like, ooh, yeah. Oh, shit, alien. Like, I got excited again.
Yes,
like,
thank you, Sigourney thank you,
Weaver.
Thank you.
Like this isn't Ghostbusters Sigourney Weaver. This, like, Ghostbusters 2. Like, this was like, this is a good, this is yeah. Alien Sigourney Weaver.
Yep, that's exactly what Damien was yelling at us in Slack. Yeah. Sigourney Weaver, alien war!
Yeah, as first of this, I'm like, oh, Ripley's back, bitches. I'm like, just like, oh, God, yeah. Watching that part, I'm like, I was all in. I'm like, I want to see her do some fight scenes, though.
Honestly.
Like, I know she does. I mean, she if you saw the alien resurrection, she was part alien, and so she did a lot of fighting of the aliens and stuff.
Alien Resurrection was like
hand to hand
over 10 years, maybe 15 years ago.
Even still, I mean, I would just like to see her do some type of choreography with fighting and kicking someone's ass. That's all.
She's going to do the Madame Gao stuff. Just like put her hand out. She's going to have some little power because she looks like she's the leader of the hand that Gao reports to. Is my theory on that. And she's going to do something with her hand magic and then not have to fight anybody. Yeah.
Okay. Trailer wise, where would you rate this? Scale 1 to 10. I personally thought this is it was probably an 8.5 because I still don't. I hate Iron Fist. Like, just get him out of this damn thing. Like, I like everybody else. I just get rid of Iron Fist, because, like, I think he's worthless. But that also bases on previous stuff. So where did you guys rate this trailer?
I'm right in the same boat. I like the trailer a lot. It's tough for me to rate trailers really high because it's a trailer. I'm excited for the show, just as excited as I was before. I'm going to watch this thing to completion. Even if I have to, like, force my way through it like I did Luke Cage season. And I think I will enjoy this a lot because they sacrificed a lot in terms of the quality of Luke Cage and Iron Fist to make this one good. And like I said, I even liked Iron Fist a lot more than most. And I think they sacrificed a lot to put their best foot forward with this series.
I liked Iron Fist a lot, but I would probably give this trailer 7.5-8. I'm just worried about it pulling a Luke Cage, kind of like we were worried about Iron Fist pulling a Luke Cage. And it, to me, I thought Iron Fist was a lot better than Luke Cage.
I'm sitting at a 7 just because there's a lot of room to go up. I don't want to go in saying I'm excited. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, if they would have put Frank Castle in, maybe I would have said,
oh, yeah, you'd have been like 9.5 if Frank Castle was in there.
It's an 11. I don't know what you're talking about. Frank Castle make that shit a living.
And that's the point of the trailer. It's not to give everything away. You don't want to give away.
Exactly. Yeah,
you never
exactly.
want to give away the third act. You want to spend most of your time in the first act, maybe a little in the second. And that's what it felt like here. If Frank Castle mm-hmm. comes in the third act like he did at the end of Daredevil season 2 as the helper of Daredevil with the snipe shots at the end and stuff like that, then that would be great. Where he's coming in as the assistant. He was gone for a bit. They recruit him back in. And then that leads into the Punisher series. I think that would be a great way to finish it off.
Fouts, I think all of us were blown away by the Dark trailer, by that Dark Tower trailer. So yes. Like, let's talk about it.
So I was literally told by Big D that he would kill us all in our sleep if we did
Make
not talk
his
about
face
this.
With his Big D.
You move the slide bar to
that maximum. That is a huge shout out to
slide
Big
bar
D.
at 10.
Anyways, I know nothing about this series at all, but watching this trailer makes me want to read the books.
Same,
honestly.
Yeah, it's like that.
Things you need to know.
Awesome.
All you need to know is who the author is.
Twisted.
Stephen King.
Stephen King. That's enough. The fact that this is the 7th of 8 books in the series, so you're catching the tail end of the series, which is awesome because they're catching you with a story that, and I was, Cajun, to your point, probably is the one that is the most commercial. And so it gives you an opportunity to either go post this movie and it the last one, or go the prequels and then talk about anything prior to this. And when you watch that trailer, guns, story, hating Matthew McConaughey. Sorry, gonna have to bleep that out. And like just being able to go guns blazing, like this trailer was badass. Like it evoked emotion. Like when I'm watching it, I'm like, oh no, yeah. Like I was into it. Like there are very few things where I watch a trailer and I'm really in. And when he starts whipping it, and the all the bullets, and like he flings the bullets into one in the air, and he catches them in the gun, and he starts shooting, and then he takes them from the belt, and he's shooting. I'm like, damn, this looks like they really captured what this character was in this trailer, and they gave an extended trailer. It was like whatever, 2 minutes 30 seconds. That's an extended trailer for something. But again, it's coming up close. We're talking about within the next 3 months,
right? And this comes out August 4th. We missed last one, but Defenders comes out August 18th. But yeah, this really, they hit all these points on this guy is one with his guns. And everything about it, how he loads his guns, how he shoots his guns, even the dialogue he gave at the end, he's one with his guns. Even the little humor about, do you have guns on your planet? Like, you're going to love Earth. When they did the transition over to the
oh, that realm. That was an awesome line.
But yeah, it's mixing the raw energy and power of guns versus the magic of McConaughey's evil character. And this looks fun, entertaining. It's coming in the summer with so much other stuff. But because it has the novels behind it, because it has Stephen King, because it has Idris Elba and Matthew McConaughey as the cast, I think this is going to do strong. And I think they're smart waiting to get the hype going later for this one and letting all of these other franchises that have sequels coming out, let them just get everybody hyped about their stuff and come like, I'm a new IP, but I'm coming out in the summer too and I'm going to blow it all away.
The only thing that bothers me is the fact that Stephen King is past where people actually care about these kind of movies. And it's also not a thriller, which he typically comes out with. So this is more of a sci-fi type thing. And so will people be interested? Will they care? Will it matter, especially in the time frame that it comes out?
I think a lot of authors, especially some of the ones who've had longer like books written a long time ago, they still have a lot of relevance today because – I mean, books are timeless. Stuff like this, sci-fi, fantasy, magic is timeless. Tech books, you can kind of lose those. But when you're talking about this stuff where it's the not as much sci-fi as it is fantasy, and being Stephen King, most people know when you convert anything he wrote to screen, it's going to be a dang good movie. And it's there's only a few cases where it's they're man movies. Most of the time it's good. So he has a lot of that, people that remember that part of it and are going to trust the story is going to be good enough for it. And man, I love watching Idris Elba chew up screen, but I do have to agree with you on Chris.
Yeah.
I like Matthew McConaughey, but I didn't buy his villain in that trailer. Damien?
Neither did I.
But it's just the dialogue in this trailer was just so good, guys. I mean, when you talked about how they ended it, and he's talking about, it's like, my guns don't do the killing. And then it shows all the different scenes of the loading the bullets and everything.
My heart does.
And then at the very end, my heart does. And you see the gun glowing. And I'm just like, that had me, I'm like, okay, I'm ready. I'm ready.
Out of his gun, and it just goes through like 10 things and then right through that dude's head.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
That alone, that right there, that had me like, I'm like, yes, yes. I'm like, and then instantly I'm like, okay, put that character in Destiny. Put that character in Destiny. Give me that because it felt like the Destiny lore stories and stuff like that.
Those guns are old school too. They're like real long and
I know. It's so good.
Like it takes, like, you know, it's
long barrel.
It's like one shot. Like, you know, he can't reload fast enough. Like, it's like every shot counts. That's the part that was awesome about that.
When he did the meditative shot, he took the gun, he pointed it, he closed his eyes, and he did, I am May the 4th, and May the 4th is with me. I am May the 4th, and May the 4th is with me. May the 4th be
dripping,
with me.
Blood dripping. And then boom.
He said a straight-up Jedi shot with his eyes closed. Yeah, it was great. Oh, man. We got really excited about that trailer. I like the energy. we ready to dial it back and go to This Week in Geek?
Hey, Doc, we better back up. We don't have enough road to get up to 88.
Roads? Well, we're going. We don't need roads.
May marks the 20th anniversary of AOL Messenger. Any fond or not so fond memories of AOL IM? My AOL IM was Ratpack 7012. I have no idea why it fucking mattered. No, nor do I care. It existed in this time frame. There were plenty of people that I talked to on IM through AOL. Like, that was my era. Not error. But era. And it was a lot of, it was cool. Like, I mean, remember when you were speaking to people, like, we didn't have Facebook. So, like, there weren't pictures. You didn't know their day-to-day shit. You just, like, literally had, like, this was who the person was. This is kind of what they said they were. And you got that super duper awesome glam pic that nobody else would ever see. And it was the chin face because, like, you didn't want to show the whole whatever it was. Like, you didn't want to show anything else. Beer goggles. That's what's up.
Yeah, that. So you're gonna throw your name out there. I'll throw mine out. And this is bad. This is like when you're thinking you're young and you're thinking you're talented with what you picked as your tag. Mine was Jer_Club_Hopper_59+10.
Douche.
Jer. Yeah. Hopper.
And
59.
For those of you at home, that was Damian Nash's wife saying douche in the background.
She just walked by. And
just letting everybody know that that will not be edited.
See, I don't remember mine. I've been thinking about it ever since we asked that question in Discord. I was trying to remember what mine was. I think mine was Gontaron, like in one of years now, because I have had that for so many areas and so long. But I didn't go into like the really bad usernames until I got into gaming.
It was so bad. And the thing is that there's some games that are coming out, these companies that come out, they want you to log into your old account. I'm like, I'm dialing that in. I'm like, oh my God, I have to reactivate an email account. Oh my God. All right.
Moving on. May the 3rd, 1984, Dell Computer Corporation is founded by Michael Dell, running the direct-to-order PC company from his dorm room at University of Texas in Austin. Just talking about Austin being a tech center. Dell Inc. eventually became the largest manufacturer of PCs in the world for many years, and it is currently surpassed by HP and Acer, but it's still up there. Hi.
Noticed Apple is not on that list, just saying.
Goddamn Austin.
So finally,
that's all I
gotta May 4th. 2000, the love letter computer virus, also known as I love you bug, spreads to personal computers running Windows around the world in just 6 hours. Spreading through email, the virus entices victims to open the message with the subject I love you. About 2.5 to 3 million PCs will become infected almost instantly. The cost of the system downtime is later estimated at $8.7 billion. It is thought to be the fastest moving and most widespread virus in history.
Dang, just tell somebody you love them and they click a button. But one virus going around right now, which, I mean, it's going to be probably more in the news by the time we actually post this podcast, is the Google Docs virus going around. So we do a lot with Google Docs. We get a lot of emails about it. But if y'all do anything with Google Docs, you get an email that looks exactly like an invite to edit a Google Doc. When you click it, that's when the hack takes place. And I think it actually asks you to log in with your Google information. That's when they steal your stuff at that point. But all of it is made to look exactly like a Google login, a Google Doc setup. So be very wary of where you're getting your Google Doc invites from, listeners. And with that, we're going to go ahead and start doing our sign-offs. You can find me, Derek, at Caucasian Saint, all one word, on Twitter, and right here on the Geekologist Radio Show, which we drop every week. Beer's been flowing. Bourbon's been flowing. We're a little slurry and a little tired at this point. Brandon, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at BFouch82. Right here, all over this podcast, editing the crap out of it.
Damien?
Hey, you can find me on Twitter at Mr. Damien Nash. Man of the Geekologist Radio Twitter page, minus the T for character restrictions. Chris and I have our article coming up on Rectify Gaming just in time for the release that just happened this week of for the disc copy of Guardians of the Galaxy from Telltales. And we're going to have some more stuff coming showing up over there, some more stuff coming up on our websites. We got a lot of things coming up into the future, but you can get me, basically, you can find me on Twitter, probably the best way to get a hold of me. But we also have a subreddit. If you check us out on Reddit, subreddit, Geekologist Radio.
Excellent. And one other thing we got is Big D, our regular contributor, he wrote an article on geekologistradio.com, him breaking down the Star Wars Last Jedi teaser trailer and kind of what it meant from the novels, the cartoons, the universe, and his theory as to what's going to actually happen in the movie and what some of the stuff in the trailer means. So if you get a chance, go find his article on The Last Jedi on geekologistradio.com, and then we'll hand it over to Chris if he's unmuted. He's not unmuted. He's not unmuted. I'm looking at this thing right now.
No. Look at the window.
Click that thing.
Damn, this thing is ridiculous. It. First of all,
you have to literally click that button.
It's bourbon. It's
and second of all, good luck finding me because I'm elusive. And I'm not even going to give you my Twitter account. So, by the way, find me Geekologist Radio or find me on this podcast. And if you can't find me, then don't find me. So, for the rest of us at Geekologist Radio, we are. Yeah. Hey, are you ready for the pants party?
Yeah.
This is the No Pants podcast.
The pants party.
No, that's the live one. We do No Pants for Life.
Middle dick. Oh,
okay, all right.
All right, so I'm going to start at the Trial of the Sword.
Wait. You going to tell me to let you in?
Middle dick, let me in. Not by the hair of your ball chin.
Did you say ball chin? Is he a Balchinian from Men in Black?
Those balls have lots of hair.
I don't know. It's going to be Men in Black 23, the next one. So
the wipe, just wipe. I don't want to even imagine his balls.
Look how much hair I got here.
I'm so glad all of this is recording.
No, I know.
Balls. That's great stuff.
And that's why I did the heavy metal version of Middle Dick. Just like, I'm recording now. Let's give that a little something.
Let's give it a little extra flair.
I thought you were going to say give it a little fluff, and I was like,
No, that's for the live episode. The live episode is when you whip it out and get banned.
That's a poof, not a fluff.
Yeah. Oh, you have an opinion? Well, look at this.
Look at this.
Excuse me while I whip this out.